Jolene was confused and wished that her mother, who had promised to call back for her at 11, would come. Presently, more calmly, Mrs. Clutter asked, "Do you like miniature things? Tiny things?" and invited Jolene into the dining room to inspect the shelves of a whatnot on which were arranged assorted Lilliputian gewgaws, scissors, thimbles, crystal flower baskets, toy figurines, forks, and knives. "I've had some of these since I was a child. Daddy and Mama, all of us, spent part of most years in California, by the ocean. And there was a shop that sold such precious little things. These cups." A set of dollhouse teacups, anchored to a diminutive tray, trembled in the palm of her hand. "Daddy gave them to me. I had a lovely childhood." The only daughter of a prosperous wheat grower named Fox, the adored sister of three older brothers, she had not been spoiled but spared, led to suppose that life was a sequence of agreeable events. Kansas autumns, California summers, a round of teacup gifts. When she was 18, inflamed by a biography of Florence Nightingale, she enrolled as a student nurse at St. Rose's Hospital in Great Bend, Kansas. She was not meant to be a nurse, and after 2 years, she confessed it. A hospital's realities, scenes, odors, sickened her. Yet to this day, she regretted not having completed the course and received her diploma, just to prove, as she had told a friend, that I once succeeded at something. Instead, she had met and married Herb, a college classmate of her oldest brother Glenn. Actually, since the two families lived within 20 miles of each other, she had long known him by sight, but the Clutters, plain farm people, were not on visiting terms with the well-to-do and cultivated Foxes. However, Herb was handsome. He was pious. He was strong-willed. He wanted her. And she was in love. "Mr. Clutter travels a great deal," she said to Jolene. "Oh, he's always headed somewhere. Washington and Chicago and Oklahoma and Kansas City. Sometimes it seems like he's never home. But wherever he goes, he remembers how I dote on tiny things." She unfolded a little paper fan. "He brought me this from San Francisco. It only cost a penny. But isn't it pretty?" The second year of the marriage, Eviana was born, and 3 years later, Beverly. After each confinement, the young mother had experienced an inexplicable despondency. Seizures of grief that sent her wandering from room to room in a hand-wringing daze. Between the births of Beverly and Nancy, 3 more years elapsed, and these were the years of the Sunday picnics and of summer excursions to Colorado, the years when she really ran her own home and was the happy center of it. But with Nancy, and then with Kenyon, the pattern of postnatal depression repeated itself, and following the birth of her son, the mood of misery that descended never altogether lifted. It lingered like a cloud that might rain or might not. She knew good days, and occasionally they accumulated into weeks, months. But even on the best of the good days, those days when she was otherwise her old self, the affectionate and charming Bonnie her friends cherished, she could not summon the social vitality her husband's pyramiding activities required. He was a joiner, a born leader. She was not, and stopped attempting to be. And so, along paths bordered by tender regard, by total fidelity, they began to go their semi-separate ways. His a public route, a march of satisfying conquests, and hers a private one that eventually wound through hospital corridors.